Men, do you ever feel like you just can't get ahead? Like you're misunderstood? Like you have no one to talk to that truly hears you?
And women, are you often frustrated, hurt, and saddened in your relationships with the men in your life?
What if there were a community of like-minded men going through the same challenges that would support, hear, and understand what you're going through?
Working together in unison to create understanding, intimacy, and strong connections. That's the Way of the Illuminated Warrior.
Way of the Illuminated Warrior Talk Show is a forum of candid conversations for men and women about men. Heard every Thursday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Being a man today is not always easy. Until now.
All right. I want to welcome my dear friend, Karina Nickerson, to the Way of the Illuminated Warrior Talk Show. We are finally connecting, and it is wonderful to have you here, my friend. How you doing?
It's good to be with you. Yeah, it's good to be here, Waska.
Yes. Lately, yeah. It's been feeling like Mercury retrograde, like with our communications, but I knew we would get together, and this is going to be a beautiful show.
Yeah, well, you know, it's my life. I mean, it's just kind of like, you know, I work more than full time and I have two little kids that I'm very involved with and I'm married. And so it's just sort of like, yeah, to get to know me is to get to like know that that's a part of my, it's just the part of the way I roll these, you know, in this juncture of my life. So thanks for your patience.
Yeah. Well, what's meant to be will be, and this is meant to be. So, well, I want to start off with, cause I think I might've mentioned to you, or I don't know if you've got a chance to listen to the show at all. The show and the work that I do is primarily with men, and the intention really is it's for men and women. I find that the shows are really helpful, but to really just to come in alignment with our feminine and masculine parts, you know, the sacred feminine, divine masculine. So when you had posted about your 19th wedding anniversary with Myron, amongst other things, that really, really touched me. And I thought that would be a great conversation to have with you, because I think the audience could really benefit from a relationship that is, I'll say, successful from what I see, loving, present. And, you know, that would be something that I know would help the guys that I work with as well as women. So I would love to start off there. So happy belated wedding anniversary again, 19. All right. Beautiful. At the 9 and a 1, at the 10, perfection. Yeah. So share with us the secret sauce, because I'm sure there's been ups and downs.
Like, is there one? You know, I think the first thing I want to say is, like, probably the healthiest thing that ever happened for me in my marriage was, like, the dismantling of my attachment to romantic love. And that's a big statement. But when I say a romantic love, and I have... this is home, right? So I have a puppy, and so you'll hear her like squeaking her little ball toy, but we'll roll with it. I think that's been a big, you know, it's like really learning how to love, like what love really is, right? Like not what I was taught or what was modeled to me or what I learned from like Hollywood or whatever. And so, me really opening up to what love is and like what it really means to love someone continues to be my deepest practice. So that's part of the secret sauce, I think, is like, I think it's something probably we all need to do is just sort of dismantle this notion that we have that love, you know, or romance, love between like, you know, spouses should be this particular way.
If I can interject, so you're saying romantic love. Have you ever read the book We by Robert A. Johnson? It's the psychology of romantic relationships, romantic love.
You know, I think I have read that.
It's a really great book that I read a few months back that really illustrates really the Maya or the illusion of what most men and women perceive as love, you know, the romantic part about it. It's such a great book. You know, it talks about the anima and the animus, the way that men approach a relationship with a woman. I mean, typically this is generalization, but it's kind of true that, I mean, and I know I've done it also, that we we meet a woman, oh my God, she's beautiful, she's the goddess, you know, we put her up on this pedestal and she's going to fulfill every need, want, desire, and thought and passionate ways that I want for me. So in a way, it's kind of like a little narcissistic, but you know, that is what a lot of guys do.
Yeah.
She's not aware of this. She can't possibly live up to it. So, of course, it wanes and it fails because it's just an illusion. And women do the same thing on the opposite realm. So it's kind of like a fantasy. And you mentioned before, like the media and then movies and stuff. That's what we're like, oh, my God.
It's so hardwired, right? I think because it just feels so good, right? It's like the dopamine of, you know, when you first meet someone and how exciting that is. And how it kind of like makes us a little crazy. Like we don't really see the other person clearly. It's just good to know that, you know, it's like, you don't really see the other person clearly until those chemicals have worn off. Mm. I mean, they have a shelf life, but when I first met my husband, he was married before. So I remember, you know, I wanted to get married, right? Like that was clear. I was clear about that. And he was clear that he wanted to get married too. But he wanted to wait for 3 years before getting married. Why? You know, why? That was fine with me, but like, why? You know, because like, for sure the chemicals have worn off by that time.
Interesting. Like, well, sure. There are studies that 2 years is, they usually say 2 years, if you sustain more than 2 years, then it's more than likely got a very good chance to go the distance, because after 2 years is usually when most couples, you know, start waning in the chemicals and the feelings and the initial romantic illusion. So he's a wise man.
And the problem is that like, we think that when that wears off, there's something wrong. Mm. One of my teachers, like, there's these little things that I can look back on because I didn't have it modeled. I didn't have any kind of, and I think a lot of us haven't maybe, but I know I'm not alone here. But like, I didn't have a healthy love modeled to me, right? My parents were divorced when I was 4. My mom never remarried. My dad remarried 3 times. And you know, from seeing my mom, I thought, well, you know, my mom was always, you know, looking for a savior, you know, someone to save her. She was always attracted to a certain kind of man. And I was too. up until I started getting more conscious and realizing that, you know, part of the attraction I had for the wrong kinds of guys, meaning guys who weren't emotionally available, guys I was never good enough for, guys who had a hard time just being with one person. This was sort of the, you know, artist, like guitar player, you know, type of like, you know, guy that I used to be attracted to. When I realized like, oh wow, it's just a whole lot like my dad. Mm. Okay, so maybe I need not trust my gut so much. Like maybe there's trauma that's coming into play in the cascade of intensity that we experience when we come into relationship with each other, like in the beginning especially. But you know, it's really hard to like, you know, sometimes it's like this drama, right, that we get so attached to, and we actually, I know for me it was like I was attracted to the guy that pulled away. Mm-hmm. Right, and so then I would lean in and he would pull away more, and then maybe I would pull back, and then he would come in, right? And it was like this sort of dance that I would do. And it's like when I got really clear that wasn't what I really wanted, that what I really wanted was a family, what I really wanted was a life partner, I was willing to like explore, you know, other kinds of people and distrust my gut more. I know that sounds weird, but it was like, you know, there was a deeper part of me when I first met my husband, because I was like, I don't really know if I like this guy. He was so boring in the way that he was really, he was just really into me, and he didn't like play any games, and he was very straightforward. He wasn't needy, but he was just knew what he wanted, and he knew he wanted me, and he was like, right from the really, you know, it was very early on, just I got the sense that he wasn't going anywhere, right? I got the sense that like he really dug me, and like he wasn't interested in anyone else, and that was like, that was my nervous system had to acclimatize to that sort of.
Yeah, that sounds pretty awesome. Sounds like he actually broke the old paradigm and what you know, because they say like we marry our parents, like, you know, he broke what maybe the mold that you thought was your dad, or that you thought you needed the exciting guitar playing, you know, radical dude who was going to rock your world. You know, and I love that, because obviously he saw what he wanted and he wasn't going to be dissuaded maybe by your standoffishness, or that you weren't into him, or that you thought he was boring. So I think that's pretty awesome. And that's great, because that breaks the chains of, you know, that dysfunctional behavior that we all, you know, you mentioned trauma, that we all suffer because of those traumas, and that we bring into our lives and we carry it forward to the next generation. So it's a beautiful thing that you gave him a chance and gave your relationship a chance, and look where you are now, right?
Yeah, and I have to say this too, and I really want folks to hear this, because like after almost 20 years in, and I'm not being disingenuous about this. I am more in love with him than I've ever been. Like, I feel like I'm just starting to get what this is all about. Right? Like, oh, okay, right? So I want to just, you know, there were many moments, as a matter of fact, before we got married, I had such cold feet, right? There were many moments when I was scared, and I just was like, I didn't know if he was right, because I thought, why would I be this afraid? Why would I be this afraid if he's, you know, if he's the one or whatever? I don't believe in the one, but you know, anymore, but like, you know, you have that. And I think that that can rattle a lot of people who have, insecure attachment style. So if you have a complex post-traumatic stress disorder, if you have trauma, always know that relational dynamics will be particularly wrought with different, like, they don't always feel good. As a matter of fact, a lot of times they don't.
We'll be right back after this.
Hey guys, this is Waska. Listen, if you're hearing my voice, there are no coincidences. Are you ready to get unblocked and take the next step forward, whether it's with relationship issues, finances, or just moving into the next phase to elevate yourself? Listen, bros, this is what I do. I'm here for you. Drop me an email at Waska, that's W-A-S-K-A, at illuminatedwarrior.com. We will work on this together and take you to the next step. I promise you'll be glad you did.
And we have to learn how to receive and give, I think, healthy love. And in the beginning, I know for me, and when I say beginning, I'm talking years. It didn't feel, there was a lot of not feeling good. There was a lot of fear that I had to like meet and work with, right?
So a lot of that was probably from the trauma and things that you grew up with. So it's giving yourself the space, and like, it's interesting that you said, trusting your gut, but not trusting it, because that's a yin, that's a feminine quality, you know, trusting our guts, trusting our intuition, going into that place of Hara or Dantien. But was it really the messages that were coming through, or was it, you know, the trauma and the other things that were more up in your head?
Which is
a lot of the work that I work with the guys. A lot of times we're in our heads, and that's why I say, you know, trust your intuition. Go to that place. You know.
But we have to also understand the way the head influences the gut. And so when there's been a predominant mode of head-centered like living, then there's this connection that is, you know, between the head and the gut, where the you know, we are disconnected from the gut. But the gut feelings that we have, right, like, are not necessarily, like, I think we can kind of sense there's a probably a need for us to learn how to decipher the language of the gut. What is your gut? What is really deep and true? And what is part of your trauma? What is, like, familiar? Like, so what is comfortable, what is familiar may not be what is good for you, right? It may be in alignment with what you wanted. I remember when, and we've had lots of therapy too, by the way. So I think that's another piece of the secret sauce, is that I think if you have a partner that's willing to do the work, whatever it might be, I think it's dumb to think that your partner should be like you. Like, I know a lot of women who are spiritual yogis, whatever, and they're always like, their partners may not be living up to their expectations because their partners don't care about the same things they do. They're not meditating. They're not, like, eating vegan or whatever. And I think that's great. Like, I mean, I think that's fine. My husband's, like, we're very different in certain ways like that. And I'm glad for it. If, you know, I wouldn't want to be like, I don't want to talk about, like, I don't want to go deep all the freaking time. You know, I do it all the time in my work, and it's like, it's nice to have a partner that, like, we can just have fun. However, you know, he's willing to do whatever it takes, right? There's always been an openness to him. So we've always, you know, his father was a psychiatrist, and he's very emotionally, intelligent. I think that was, like, you know, that was really important for me. So yeah, I think that, you know, so being willing to, like, expect bumps in the road and to expect things, like, feelings to come up around your partner that you think, like, you think just shouldn't be there, like, you know, hatred or disgust <Yeah. laughs> or like serious aversion or deep terror and fear, you know, all of those I think are gonna come up in a conscious relationship. And so do you have a partner who can really, like, talk with you about it, kind of, you know, be with you in it? You know, they're not gonna do it perfectly, but, or does that freak them out? You know, do they have the capacity to do that? I think those are all, like, important questions for us to ask ourselves, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting when you were talking about Myra and your husband. I'm hearing, like, unconditional love, because, you know, there's one thing in relationships where when a guy is courting or chasing a woman, you know, it's the thrill of, oh, you know, the conquest. That's another, you know, misnomer and an unhealthy way, you know, to start a relationship. Just the conquest. It's more of, you know, I like the old fashioned, like, the courting and actually looking to establish love. So it sounds like he has, and I could be wrong, you tell me if it's accurate or not. It sounds like he's found an unconditional love in your relationship and for you, and whatever walls you're going to throw up or whatever you're going to throw to the relationship, he's willing to work with it. And that's maybe part of the cohesiveness and the communion that you guys have, right?
Yeah, I think, like, this is so good, because what you're mentioning too is a sense of one of my mentors, who, you know, I really recommend, his name is Jason Gaddis, around relationship. That's what he does. He's all about, you know, learning to do relationship, as he says, because no one taught us. And so, so something that you know, Jason Gaddis mentioned, and mentions, is how safety and security in relationship, meaning your nervous system is able to relax around this person. There's a sense they're not going anywhere. If that's not happening, really nothing else can happen. It's really hard to develop roots with someone if you're always afraid that they're going to, you know, oh, it's something that you say or something that you do might make them leave or might make them fall out of, like, love with you or whatever. And so I think it's awareness around that is important, because usually it's like, well, what do you want in a partner? And you might, like, oh, you know, name off your things, like, you know your things. Funny, adventurous, spiritual, you know, attractive, whatever. But number one, really, like, if we view it from the lens of attachment, like having secure attachment with somebody, you know, which is so wonderful, such a wonderful thing we can do, like, to have a life partner that we feel like when we come home, it's like a secure home base. You know, that's like something we need to look for.
Yeah. Is
this somebody, and something with my husband that was different than, say, all the other guys that I dated, was I would tend towards, if you know, in the language of attachment, I would tend towards avoidant men who were insecurely attached, just like me, but they were avoidant where I was insecure. So I would lean in and they would lean back. And there was something about that was just intoxicating to me. And you said that, right? There's something about that would just put me, I couldn't get enough of it. And until I could, when I found my husband, he was securely attached. He is securely attached. So he had this way of being really like available to me. At the same time, I never felt needy or smothered or anything or control. He was like, didn't have any of that, but yeah, just this real, I guess unconditional. And so he grew up with parents who had a good enough marriage, right? He had good enough parenting.
That makes a big difference when it's being modeled for you, because if not, a lot of the guys that I work with, including myself, you know, I grew up in an alcoholic family, so I did not want to emulate what my dad did, the drinking, the gambling, the womanizing. So I'm hearing a given is the safety and security you're speaking about. But what are the other qualities that you say really draw you guys together that's really important for you? Because the safety and security, I think that has to be a given. It's not always, but I think that's really, we'll go with that as a given. What are the other qualities?
Well, I think it's really important. Like I it's so good to know yourself and know what you want. Right. So like I know family is important, and like and both of us really value family, meaning like we value, being who we need to be who our kids need us to be. And I think that comes to like a devotion to what Robert Bly called the third body. So it's not like when you come together in that way, it's no longer you and it's no longer me, but it is a we. There is still me and there's still you, but there's a we now too. And are we devoted to we? Because we both have to be devoted to we. It's like, it's not about, you know, and then there's the whole thing of like blame and criticism. I think both of y'all have to be like grown up enough to mitigate it. Right. And I think that there's a certain level of like, so my partner, I knew I needed someone who was like emotionally mature, like someone who wasn't stuck in that, like blame, shame, you know, all of that. I mean, we'll go there, but ultimately it's like, if I start to do it, I'll notice I'm doing it and like, oh, I don't want to do this.
Yeah, that's really key, because that the mindfulness and the awareness of knowing that it's happening, because it happens to most, if not all of us, but to be able to like sit across from your partner and like listen and be present and to hear what they have to say. And you don't have to agree with them. You don't have to agree with each other, but to actually just accept that, okay, this person is feeling this way and I can empathize with them and we could come to a happy place that, okay, I feel you. I want to do what makes you happy, you know, and also I want to hear you to hear how I feel and let's work together, rather than the, you know, no, I'm right, you're wrong. And, you know, I'm interjecting, I'm interrupting, you know, that's a common scenario also.
Oh my gosh. I know. It's like what you're saying right now is like the ninja. Like that's like ninja move, you know, like, but you're right. That's what it takes. It takes, It takes two people being willing to know when they're in their lizard brain. You can't do anything from that place, right? So it's like, I think there's so much to learning how to do relationship, like you're saying, you know, it's like we have to learn because no one taught us.
Yeah.
And one of the things about relationship, it's like, don't, if you're escalated, if you're angry, if the charge is high, if you're activated, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah. That's walk good. Away. Yeah.
You have to like take a break, take a time out with clear understanding of when you'll come back together, right? That has to also be part of it. But yeah, with my clients too, it's like I always, you know, suggest that nothing happened from a place of elevation. Like you have to come down to you have to feel like you're connected. Otherwise, you can't get in someone else's shoes. Your empathy is totally cut off. You can't do it. It's impossible.
Yeah.
And being willing to get into somebody else's shoes, you know, is important too. Like Jason Gaddis, when he talks about conflict, you know, and resolving conflict, he has this tool called LUFU, which is listening until feeling understood. Mm-hmm. And so it's like this commitment as a partner that... you don't get to decide that you've heard someone. Like, I don't get to decide that I've heard Myron. He decides if I've heard him or not. And until he says I've heard him and he feels heard, I haven't understood him. I haven't understood him deeply. Right? So it's this kind of like really desiring to get another's world, but not to the extent that you lose yourself, which is the trap of a codependent. And women that I work with will do this. You know, it's like I had a client one time come to me and she's like, I really just need to know in her intention. It was like, am I being too empathetic here?
Mm.
And yeah, especially like you or me, when we grew up in alcoholic homes, we have this superpower of like totally getting the other's world and we disappear in the process. And it's a good survival skill until it's not, you know, until it just ceases to help us be, take up space in relationship.
Yeah. Yeah.
So knowing yourself, but then also being willing to understand and get their world. Yeah,
that's really important. I like that, the understanding part, because that's really is key to having that, I think, that back and forth, but also that the empathy comes from understanding. So I came up with an acronym that I told the guys, you know, they offered that, am I sure? To ask yourself, am I sure? So S-U-R-E. So the first one, the S is, am I safe? Because, you know, like we were talking, just like you said before, you know, safety and security. I mean, even with kids, first thing, you know, safety first. So am I safe is the S. The U is understanding. Am I being understood? You know, because just like you're saying, and Gaddis said, it's very important to have that empathy in understanding each other. The R is respected, because I think mutual respect is key. Again, we don't have to necessarily agree with each other, but having that mutual respect for each other to allow the other person to express how they need to express, emote whatever it is, and to find that place of empathy, you know. And that's the E at the end is both two, is empathy and empowerment. You know, was there empathy there, and do I feel empowered? So I like that, you know, to offer the guys or the girls or any of the people listening, am I sure?
I think too, like your frame is particularly helpful for those of us who tend to minimize, right? Like, it's like, I love that, because it's like, it's calling to the person, you know, it's calling to you to really be connected to you. I like, and the respect piece I think is really important. And like, I think part of a good partnership or marriage is continually preserving that. Mm-hmm. Like noticing if it's waning, noticing if you're starting to like I don't know, you know, like it's so easy to start to do, but you just start to use a tone or, you know, it's like you start to treat your partner with like, but I think it's, that's easy. I think it's easy to get into that trap.
Sure. That's complacency, right? Complacency and taking somebody for granted. So I want to take a step back for a second, because you said something I think was very profound earlier, that your relationship is like almost 20 years now, and it's getting better. You feel like it's more connected. And also, why? Because I think that's a really important thing to touch upon. Like, there's a lot of relationships. I'm sure you have friends also that, you know, either they're divorced even more than once, or their relationships are not great and they're staying together for whatever reason. So what is it in your relationship that has you feeling that it's just gotten better 20 years in?
Yeah. There's a few things that are coming to me. One is me continuing to do my own work, because I think that's been paramount to really getting, oh, this is mine. Like that whole moment of, oh, this is mine. Like, I know we say it all the time, right? Like, oh, that's yours, that's theirs. But to really get it, it's taken me a long time, and it's something that it's just kind of my body has worked out. Like, so I think, because that's so integral to like, to, us individuating. I think when we first met, we were a lot younger too. So wisdom is a part of it, right? I've continued to grow. He's continued to grow. We've done a lot of couples work. A lot. We've done communication courses together. You have to know how to speak the same language, right? But I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful that I've like there's been many forks in the road in our marriage, like many moments where it was like, are we gonna stay together? And I'm so glad that we have, and I'm so glad that, you know, I've stayed, because I tend to be the more avoidant, like more in our relationship, you know? So it's like, I'm so grateful I have, because it's helped me be like, it's helped me to be the person I need to be to like really love, you know, and be loved. I mean, it's like, yeah. So, I think, yeah. And then the last piece too, I think it's important for me to always think of my marriage as sacred. And so it's sacred in the way that I talk about it and who I talk about it with. I don't seek counsel from anybody about my marriage unless they have a rockin' marriage. And I really trust they know what they're talking about and that they have our best interests at heart. So there's two people who I reserve, you know, conversations, aside from my husband, of course, about challenges I'm having in the relationship or things we're going through. No one else hears about it. Not even my friends. Because in my experience, my friends are my friends, but they're not always the best counsel.
Yeah.
They may not have rockin' relationships. I don't need their input. Because, you know, because input makes a difference, right? It's like, so I'm very careful about that too.
That's a good point, because also input may lead to, you know, other people's opinions, which you're not asking for and are not always welcome, you know? So they say misery loves company. If somebody's not happy in their relationship, I mean, I've experienced that in the past, you know, people want to like empathize, hopefully empathize that your relationship is not good either, which is not healthy. So it's good not to bring that to friends. But I like that you're saying that, because it really does keep it sacred. You know, you're not, you know, talking about your spouse to somebody else. And it's just, I think it's great. It keeps it sacred in that regard.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, that's, and then also, you know, it's like too, note it, like letting my husband have differences from me and not making him wrong for it. Like, there's certain things I'm really good at. Like, I'm good at, you know, I'm better than him, say it, like schedules and calendars and things like that. I don't really particularly like it, but I'm better at it and it has to get done. So I do it. He does other things, right? There are other things that he's better at.
We'll be right back after this.
Do you sometimes feel down, lost, or lonely? Are your finances feeling sluggish? Can your relationships use a healthy tune-up? Don't fear, bro. Help is here. Experience the benefits of connecting with other men who are going through similar challenges. Be supported in our safe, sacred, and inspiring monthly telecircle with the Brotherhood of the Illuminated Warriors. Connect with Waska for one-on-one mentoring with the first session completely free. What have you got to lose? Check out illuminatedwarrior.com or send an email to waska@illuminatedwarrior.com. You're invited to step up your game and join us. You'll be glad you did.
It's so easy to blame your partner for, I'll never forget in a therapy session, I was so triggered around something that had happened in my, you know, and my feeling was, right, that he was being, he was irresponsible, right? He was irresponsible. He's like, whatever. And then, so then I got to, right, name like 20 ways that I've been irresponsible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, because it's really like, a mirror, like, right? Aren't our partners really mirrors for us anyway? So
sure.
It's a great question to ask, like, where is this in me? So he's irresponsible. Well, where is this in me? And it sounds like you did that exercise because it is reflective.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean that you don't, right? And then it's like that's a really good practice for draining the charge. Right. So that then, but it doesn't mean that you don't like establish a boundary or a request.
Sure.
Right. It's like, right. But it's like now I'm actually dealing with the reality of the circumstance. I'm not projecting all my stuff onto him. I'm not reliving the past or whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
And you can create empathy with that also if you ask, like, where is this in me? You, at least I find that to be true. Like, at least you could say, well, okay, yes, I've been irresponsible, so who am I to judge? We're all human beings, you know? And also you made a very good point earlier as well, which I think is happens a lot in relationships where there is discourse and argument, and then it's just like you just want to win it at any cost, and it's not going anywhere, as you said before. So it's really important, especially for guys, because a lot of times we don't do this. We just, you know, and I'm not saying women don't do this either, but we just walk away. And that's really not a good way to leave off. It's very important to communicate, like, hey, you know, let's just take a breather. Let's take a moment here. Let's wait until we have time to process, calm down, think about it, and I will be back in an hour or two, or we could discuss it, you know, after dinner, whenever it is. But setting a very clear notion of, okay, I know this is not in the best frame of mind right now. We're going to talk about it and I will be back, rather than just storming off and saying, because that doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love that. Cause I think it is important to step away. Right. We were talking about earlier when you're in your hindbrain, you're mad, you're activated. It's better to take a moment, like absolutely, but have clear, clear understanding, clear communication about when the return will happen. Because to somebody who is, to some people, it's so scary, right? If you walk away, are you going to come back? Like, because we haven't experienced maybe repair after rupture, and we don't understand that we can have rupture and repair. I think that's that's such a big part of healing trauma, developmental trauma in particular, is like, okay, we can have rupture and repair. 100%. And then it's always good too, right, to just be like, I'm mad, I'm angry. Right. I don't know about you. I don't know, you know, but I'm angry and I need to take a moment. I don't want to say something that I'm going to regret or whatever. It's like, I know that I need to calm down so that I can really, really listen to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's important. That reminds me, like in our circles, one of the tenets is to speak from the I, meaning like, just as you said, well, I feel this, or this was my experience, rather than, well, we should, or we did, or you, or because that's when you're speaking to your partner or anybody else, and it's like, well, you made me feel, and you did this. I mean, that's antagonistic.
Or I think it would be really good for you to meditate. I think it would be really good. It's just like, yeah, good luck with that.
Well, see, that's a button pusher for me.
It would be really good for you to start exercising more. It's like, bullshit, that's not the truth. The truth is, I would really like you to start meditating because I want you to be more calm. Because when you're mad, it freaks me out and it scares me. So it's like, we have to be just careful too about advice giving and all that shit. It doesn't, it's not useful, and it's not honest.
Yeah. Well, it's the language, just like you're saying also, just like you said that, well, I want you to, or the way you originally said it, or you need to, or you have to, or that was always a button pusher for me. When I was young and I finally came into my own, you know, power, I'm like, nobody's telling me what to do. So if you said it like, hey, I would really invite you to, or this would be, maybe this might be good for you. That's one thing. But if you're saying like, hey, you really need to go exercise or whatever it is, immediately, even if I needed to go exercise, nope, don't tell me what to do. So the language is really important, not to be aggressive and not to be self-serving with it, you know, so the other person can hear you the way you actually mean it.
Yeah, because there's like a sense like, oh, so I'm not enough as I am, then. It's basically what you're telling me, right? And maybe that's what we are communicating. And that's like, we just want to be clean about it. Honest, just be honest. It's like, I'm having trouble. I don't like your whatever. Like, I don't like how reactive you get or whatever the thing is. I mean, that's more honest than you need to meditate.
Yes.
Or you need to handle that. Or, you know, whatever it is that we might say, put it off on them, you know. Well, I'm doing all this work. What are you doing?
Right. Well, it's personal responsibility. Like somebody had said something to me that really was an epiphany for me. And it was around my family. Like, I would get very reactive and I would fight. And I, you know, all the things, all these decades I'm working on, you know, personal growth and all, it would all go out the window, you know. And I would start pointing my fingers and I would get angry and I would be, you know, like, well, she did this. And the reality is taking responsibility. Like, I don't like who I am around them when these situations happen, you know, and I own that, you know, I do. I mean, that's what it really is. I don't like myself when I'm around them in those situations. So I'm not gonna start blaming them and saying, well, you did this and she did that. I don't like me when I'm in that situation. So I'm gonna create a healthy boundary. I'm gonna step back and I'm not going to engage in that kind of behavior, you know? And that's empowering.
I love that. It's clean. Right? It's like, it's clean. It's you taking responsibility for you and not blaming someone else for your feelings.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's a ninja move. I think it's really important that we prioritize like self-awareness.
Yeah. Right? And self-care also. Right. So how many times do you, you know, give advice to somebody or, you know, care for somebody else when a lot of times the same situation is happening for you, but you don't care for yourself, right?
Totally. Totally. It's so true. It's like, I know I was working with a client and I think, you know, I know in my own like codependency or whatever. I was so good at that. Right? Like so good at that. And then caretaking someone else, right? Like really trying to manage them. If only they could get their act together, then I'll be happy. It's like, well, no. Like where do I need to get my act together? Yeah. Like where do I need to, that's so important. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Take care of yourself.
Well, I think like the self-mastery, as they call it, is so important. Like what I mean by that is really like to know thyself. Like I know who I am. I know what I need. I know what I like. I know what I want. And I'm not going to change myself per se to suit somebody else's needs, wants, or desires. I mean, I'm open to obviously communicating and compromising and all that. But the core of who I am, if I'm not going to honor myself and really respect myself enough to tell somebody, hey, this doesn't feel good to me, or this is important to me, or this is how I roll. And I just, you know, and I am Scorpio, I'm a fixed sign, you know, but I've learned to be more mutable in the ways that I communicate and what I really need to be happy. Because if I'm not happy with myself, if I don't love myself, if I don't care for myself, how am I going to expect anybody else to do that for me? And how am I going to do that for anybody else, right?
Yeah, I love this too, because what I'm realizing as you're saying this is I think when we do really, you know, the Buddha talked a lot about like dukkha, suffering, and the pain that we cause ourselves when we believe that, right, like dukkha shouldn't happen. Like, oh, my partner shouldn't still have baggage. Like, bullshit, your partner's going to have baggage for the rest of your lives together. That's called being human. You know, it's like dukkha. People have, you know, and it's like we all have, you know, there's a million things right and a million things wrong, and good, you know, nothing you can do about it. That's what we're up against. That's life. But yeah. The pain that we cause ourselves, when the extra pain we cause when we think that somehow if I just fix this, then my life will be totally comfortable all the time, right? Like, it's like, no, like getting your partner to really be there for you isn't what makes you happy. That's actually not it. You're looking in the wrong place. You being there for you, right? And that sort of takes the pressure off your partner to do that, which is impossible. I remember when we got married, my teacher married us. His name is Dr. Andrew Shugio Bonici, and he's been my teacher for 20 years. And he's awesome. He's been married for a long time. He has such a good marriage to his wife, Diana, like, you know, and he's been such a father figure for me too. He's my Dharma dad. He married my husband and I remember when he and Diana came out for our wedding, because they live on the big island of Hawaii. They were with me, you know, they were standing next to me, and I forget who was with us, but he was introducing Diana to the person. And the person said, oh, it's your other half. And he said, well, I like to think of her as my other whole. And you know, it was like, oh, right. You know, right. The more whole I feel, the more okay I am in my own skin, regardless of how Myron's doing. Myron's my husband. The happier I am in my marriage,
The happier he'll be also. Yes.
Yeah. The
no,
more
codependence
he can be
there.
Himself. Yeah. The more he can be himself. Right. Like, you know, I used to try to make him drink chai tea because I thought it would be so much healthier than his Coca-Cola. Right.
Well, it is, but that's.
But my husband, but it's like, he likes Coca-Cola, and now it's like, oh my gosh, I wouldn't have it any other way, right? I wouldn't have it any other way.
Right? Well, you got to choose your battles also, right? I mean, that's
it's well, that, a yeah. Yeah, it told 100%. Yeah, like, and then there was like, you know, I remember, right. So it is important when we're in a relationship, so you're like an ecosystem. Like, we have to, like, one of the agreements that we have, and I think it's important for marriages to have agreements, is that we take good care of ourselves.
Absolutely.
Because, right, like, I'm 11 years younger than my husband, and, like, I am very interested in having an active lifestyle until I'm very old. And I want to make sure that my partner is able to do that, too. And so that has to be a core value of theirs, right? Like this like around health, right? And around like, right? So, but like, yeah, before we had our daughter, my husband used to chew tobacco, right? It's so gross. That's such a gross habit.
Yeah, yeah, but it goes with Coca-Cola, so, you know.
I know. But I kind of love it, too. You know, I love that he's like that. I love that he drinks Coca-Cola and watches baseball and doesn't give a shit what his clothes look like. Right? I love that about him, right? He's like a voracious reader, and he's just him. He's so cool. But anyway, he was chewing tobacco. And that, however, it, you know, it's like, that's Cancerville. You know, I mean, he drinks Coca-Cola on occasion, right? This was a daily habit that kills you, right? So that was a battle I fought. And I said, you know, I expressed very sincerely, I wanted him to quit and the reason why. And that was kind of a non-negotiable for me. Like, he needed to quit. And he did. You know, he did. And so that was like, you know, it's like, I don't make those kinds of, that was a big request, right? Yeah. It was, and I was very serious about it.
But that's fair. If that's part of your agreement is to take care of yourself, that's not really taking care of yourself for you or for your kids or for him. So I think
And up until kids came in the picture, I was okay. Like it didn't bother me that much. I mean, it was more occasional. Like I'd never kiss him or anything, like gross, like, you know, but when he'd get together with his buddies and they'd watch the game or whatever, he kind of, you know, that was the thing he loved. And so he just replaced it, right? There's like an herbal replacement, right? And then, I mean, he doesn't, you know, I mean, he hasn't done that for a very long time. But yeah, there are sometimes battles you have to fight.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you were talking about the Buddha before. I mean, the key to liberation is really not craving and not avoiding, you know, the attachment and the craving and the aversion, you know. So you could look at any of these things, whether it's chewing tobacco, Coca-Cola, being needy, whatever it is. So that's, you know, it's a challenging practice, but it's a beautiful practice also, not to desire and crave things all the time or any of the time, but we do, and not to avert.
Well, yeah, I think if I could just add a little bit here. Yeah, it's like, it's about really understanding as long as we're human, we will desire.
Yeah.
And we are very attached to pleasant and unpleasant.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we don't see through, so I'm just inviting this different kind of like look at it. If we don't see through the pull of pleasant and unpleasant, then we will fidget our way, as one of my teachers says, we will fidget our way from cradle to grave. So it's not necessarily like, it's not desire, because desire is like holy, you know, in so many ways, right? Without desire, we don't have the longing, and without the longing, we don't become, right? But it's about not being as pulled by the winds of pleasant and unpleasant. Mm. Like, I'm not enslaved to pleasant and unpleasant.
Yeah.
And that's freedom.
Yeah. It's finding a healthy balance. I remember when I did a Vipassana retreat, and it took a couple of days to get into it, but then I felt very blissful, and they checked in, the guy checked in. He's like, "How you doing?" I'm like, "Oh, I'm in a state of bliss." And his comment was, "You'll get over it." And, right? And at first I was like, "Hey man, that's not cool. This is the way I want to feel." And he's like, "No, that's not the way you want to feel, because you were averting the pain that was in your back from sitting for hours. You were averting going into your head. You were averting this and that and the other thing. And now you're craving, you know, the good feelings of blissfulness that you had." And then I sat with that. I'm like, yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah, I love it. That's why I love Buddhism. You know, it's like, because it's honest. The Buddha was honest. It's not sexy. It's not what sells. It isn't. I mean, you know, there aren't that many Buddhists out there.
Well, it brings peace of mind, though, you know.
Yeah,
it does bring peace of mind, which, yeah.
Yeah, because it's like in some way we want to believe that we're going to find that person who completes us and that we'll live happily ever after. And we will spend any amount of money and do any amount of things to have that until I think we bump up against enough like disappointment to go, you know what? Maybe that doesn't exist. Maybe that is an illusion. And the Buddha was brave enough to say, yeah, it is an illusion.
It's all an illusion. Yes, yes.
There's another way though. And it's called the middle way. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, this has been wonderful. But so before we close, I want to give you the opportunity for anything left unsaid that you want to share with the audience. We touched upon a lot of different things. So any closing thoughts to give the audience to chew on?
You know, I think that so much of this is about really getting in your blood and your bones and your marrow that you deserve to love and be loved. You deserve to love and be loved, right?
Amen.
And yeah. Good enough is good enough, really. For ourselves and for the people that we love. We can spend less time fixing others and more time loving them. Less time judging others and more time loving and enjoying them. Life is short.
Yeah. Well, love is the answer and the question is irrelevant. So that's a great place to end. Yes.
Oh, thanks, Waska.
Oh, this is beautiful, my friend. So just if you want to offer the audience any way that they could reach you, and I'll make sure that goes in the show notes and all and on the video.
Yeah, you know what? I would love for you to come sit with me. We sit every Tuesday. Anyone is welcome, and you can find the link to the online meditation and Dharma talk. If you kind of liked some of the things I said and all that, you'll really love that. So it's Tuesday mornings at 9 a.m. PT. You can get the link by getting onto my website, karinanickerson.com. You can get a free gift if you sign up for my list. And then you'll get the link as well to the Tuesday sits.
The free gift is not chewing tobacco, is it?
No, unfortunately. The free gift is a masterclass called The Courage to Shine. Yeah,
beautiful.
The courage to shine, the courage to take up space, the courage to be, the courage to be all of you without apology. Yeah, especially if you're empathic, if you're a soul-led leader of love, you'll love that masterclass. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you, my friend. This was wonderful.
Thanks.
So let us continue to illuminate our paths with loving kindness.
I love it.
Visit illuminatedwarrior.com if you'd like to go deeper and find out more about what's available within the Illuminated Warrior Men's Transformational Community. Tune in next time for more candid conversations for men and women about men on the way of the Illuminated Warrior Talk Show every Thursday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Until next time, illuminate your path with loving kindness.